going on, everybody? Tony Velasco here, back with episode number 7 of the Tony V Project. Got my good buddy Gio here. Known each other since high school, long time.
Long time.
Long time. But welcome back. We missed about a week, and we got something a little bit different for you guys this time. So, got Gio here. He's been a, how long have you been a cop for?
11 years.
11 years, and we got a couple of really cool, some crazy, actually, stories that he's going to kind of go into. And before we get into them, I really wanted to bring him on here because I think a lot of people don't really necessarily understand some of the shit, really, that, you know, our police, fire, military, et cetera, go through on a daily basis. I think anyone who knows me knows how strongly, like, I back each and every one of them. And really just appreciate what they do for us on a daily basis, giving us the freedoms that they do. And so kind of maybe bringing to light some of the crazier stuff that they have to go through, I think would be kind of cool for everyone to see. So we're going to get into it. But before we get into that harder stuff and the crazier stories, I want to kind of kick it off with something a little bit more lighthearted. And so, Gio, why don't you introduce yourself first? Give us a little background on, you know, what you do, how you got started, all that good stuff, and then I'll throw kind of a fun question at you to get this thing rolling.
All right. Giovanni Lampignano. Been a member here almost since it opened.
Yeah, yeah.
When it had the foldable table in the front with the, with the laptop.
The lobby, is along with everything else, has undergone a lot of changes since then.
Yeah, absolutely. Known you since high school.
Yeah. Known your brother, and had some good times back in the day.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be able to fit those on here, but maybe. Probably recognize me. I kind of walk around, and you probably think I'm angry or something like that.
You get the guy version of the angry bitch face.
I'm just quiet. Got on the sheriff's department back in 2006.
How old were you then?
I just had turned 23.
Okay. And 21 is how old you have to be to...
Well, you could get on in the sheriff's department at 19 or 19 and a half.
Got
and
it.
Just work the jails.
Okay.
In order to, because you can't, the ammunition thing, you have to be 21.
What do you mean?
So in order to buy ammunition, you have to be 21 years old when I got on. So like there was a guy that was 20...
I didn't even know that.
20 years old when he got on, and his mom or... Dad had to buy ammunition for his gun. So
that's awkward.
Yeah, that was a little different, but he got on young. No family in law enforcement. I was just finishing up my degree at Cal State Northridge, and didn't know what I wanted to do. So kind of panicked in a way, and knew I didn't want to do behind a desk type thing. So I just applied, and 3 months later I got a call saying, you start the academy in like 2 weeks or something.
So obviously you probably, I can't even imagine. My dad's a cop, for anyone who doesn't know, or he retired just recently. So my dad was a cop, my uncle is a cop. Countless members and friends that have gone into law enforcement and, again, fire department, et cetera. So just have a lot of people that are in that industry. And so I've heard stories over the years of some of the more off-the-wall stuff. But I want to know, from your standpoint, like, what is one of the more funny stories that you've come across in your time?
I mean, obviously, there's a lot, almost on a daily basis that you run across, depending on where you work and kind of people you contact. But one that comes to mind, when I was new on the department, out on patrol in the Antelope Valley, there's a an area where a lot of people use drugs. So, and it's a lookout point off the 14 freeway. So every other hour or whatever, we'd make a pass by there. Long story short is I cruise up in this dark overlook off the 14. And I notice somebody in the car that looks suspicious, moving around a lot. So I go up to talk to him to see what's going on. Initially, obviously, I see long hair, blonde hair, and at first glance, somebody with red lipstick on. So I'm making my way around the front of the vehicle, and and I have my flashlight on them, and I see just a look of terror, and it looks like a woman. So I assume it's a woman that's scared, and I'm looking for maybe why she's so scared, beside the fact that I'm there. Car starts, goes in reverse. I'm obviously yelling for him to stop, or her to stop.
Yeah, you don't know at that point.
Yeah, and it takes off. And being a new deputy, I'm obviously excited. And I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be a good reason why this guy's running. So I jump in my car, and I try to catch him. But he's, by the time I run back up to my car and get in, I'm just basically looking for this guy. I think he gets off the freeway. I catch him. I see him off the freeway in a parking lot. So I pull him over, and I walk back up, and he actually stops. I get a good look. It's a light parking lot with a lot of lights, and it ends up being, I didn't know how to really react at the time, because I pictured I'm going to be talking to a woman. However, it's a man, a very large man with bright red lipstick on. He had taken off the blonde wig, so he had dark, short hair now, and a tight miniskirt on. So I imagine that's probably why he took off, because he was maybe living out a fantasy of his. I don't know, and I caught him doing something.
He didn't want to go home and tell the wife that.
Yeah, his one request.
His extracurricular activities.
Yeah, his one request was he didn't want his wife to find out that he was wearing.
Literally, that's what he said.
Wearing his miniskirt.
So he literally asked you that. He's like,
yeah,
can you not?
Yeah. He's like, you could write me any ticket you want, take me to jail. Just you can't call my wife. So, you know, it was something that I had to chuckle about. Ended up understanding, kind of, you know, have to rationalize at that point, and everyone's entitled to do what they want to do. So, you know, I can understand why he probably took off.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's probably one of the ones I like telling.
That's a funny one.
When it comes up. So yeah. It's kind of lighthearted.
So anyone who doesn't know, Gio was, he's got a couple stories, and he's telling us more stories now before we even got filming. So he's got a lot to share with you guys. But the original reason I brought him on here was he was shot on duty, how many years ago?
July 12th, 2009.
2009, so what, almost 9 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And then he was also at Route 91, and while we knew a handful of people, I'd say more than a handful, probably 10 to 20 people that were actually there at the concert, Gio was one of the people that was literally ground zero, stayed through the whole thing, and has quite the tale, if you will, on kind of just, you know, living it firsthand. So I'll let you start it off, going into the thing that happened back in 09, and I know you got a little prequel to that, so the floor is yours on that.
Obviously, it's been several years since this happened, and usually I've talked to other deputies and academy classes, stuff like that, but I haven't really talked to, you know, too many, I guess you'd say civilians
yeah.
about the incident. It was July 6th, 2009. I was about to get off work. It was about 11 o'clock. I get off at midnight. Long story short is I find it ends up being a pretty bad guy. And I stop him and get him out of the car because there was some drug stuff going on. And it's kind of a funny story. I'm searching him, and I'm a new deputy, and I feel something in his butt, you know, in his butt crack. And I'm thinking, first thought was, I don't know what movie that is, but the guy with the little tail, right? I'm trying to take a little tail, like the bone that sticks out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no way. That can't really be, right? I found one type deal. It ended up being drugs. And he was a parolee. So he didn't want to go back to jail. He thought he was going to jail. Back in 2009, drugs were still a crime, unlike today. So, sorry. So so he wanted to go back to jail. We get in a fight, quite a long fight. He ends up trying to take my gun. He wasn't able to, but it was about 4.5 minutes of a fight before any of my backup was able to get there.
Damn. I'd be exhausted.
I was extremely exhausted. It turned into more like slap boxing than fighting. But I ended up tearing my knee, my ACL and MCL, but I'm still a new deputy, so I thought I just bruised it from falling on the ground and stuff. So I'm off work because it was hard for me to walk, and it was obviously a traumatic experience. I want to make sure that I, you know, am okay before I come back to work. And but I was chipping at the bit because I'm going crazy at home. You know, single dude, have nothing better to do but go to work. So July 12th is my first day back. They say, hey.
How long after?
That would be 6 days, basically.
Okay. So, yes. Oh, so right.
So less than a week.
So you.
July 6th.
How was your knee after that?
It hurt.
But you thought you were good still.
Yeah, it was swollen and it hurt. And I'm like, you know what? I just bruised it real bad.
Got it. So right? You didn't even know that you had torn it yet.
Didn't have, had no clue.
Got it.
So July 12th, I come back to work, get in that same car, which is the same call sign, which is the cursed car. I probably won't ever work it again. get in the car and all day they're nice to me. I started at 4:00. For 4 hours, they're just sending me backup requests, you know, and assists. They won't give me the handle on stuff, which is nice. They're just kind of easing me back into it, I think. You know, people are telling me, hey, just calm down, take it easy today. And I'm just really not that kind of person. So I mellowed out for about 4 hours back. Just got done backing a partner up, meaning she was on a traffic stop, and I came and made sure she was all right. Pulled my car about a half a block down and saw an individual that was interesting to me. Baggy clothing, tattoos, stuff like that. A lot of indicators that I cued on. As he saw me, he made a hard turn to try to avoid me. And he goes to apartment complex as I'm slowly coming down the street. So I have my windows down, so I get out, and he doesn't have a key, and he's trying to yank the door open.
Like a house door?
It's an apartment complex.
Get into the complex. Got it.
And then it gets into the courtyard.
Yep.
So I call him over to my car to talk to him.
You're out of your car now?
I'm out of my car.
Yeah.
I'm at the driver's side, I guess. Actually, we can.
You want to throw out the pictures?
I could, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably explain it that way.
So, and just so everybody knows, for those who are listening to the podcast right now, definitely try to go to YouTube and actually watch the YouTube video, because we have some actually pretty crazy, like, pictures of this. I'll hold it up here.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's daytime. It's in July. It's about 8:00, I would say. But 8:00 in summertime, it's pretty.
Yeah, still bright outside.
Yeah. Doesn't get dark until like 8:30, 8:45. So, it's about 8:00. I'm standing right here, and the fence in the apartment complex is over here. This is part of the apartment complex. I call him over. He's still trying to get in, trying to get away from me. He turns around, kind of does the, okay, cool. Just walks his way back over here to my car. And I have him grab the hood of my car. And meaning put his hands on the hood so I can talk to him. And there's a lot of officer safety stuff is why we do that. So as I'm walking over here talking to him and I make my way around the front of the car, there's a push bar. So you naturally, you can see someone, but you naturally kind of glance down so you don't bang your knee on it. As I'm making my way to about the middle of the car, he takes his hand out and puts it in his pants. Initially, a lot of people like to say, oh crap, I got some dope or I got some weed, and they try to like get rid of it real quick. So that's alarming to me though, because you know, hands disappear, they tend to hurt us. So I start to pull my gun out just in case and tell him, hey dude, get your hand out of your pants. Well, he listens to me, but he comes out with a gun, right? So hindsight, maybe I should have said, hey dude, just keep your hand in your pants.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, he comes out with a gun, and he's tall, he's over 6 feet, and he's right here and I'm about right here, and he basically reaches out and like touches me with his gun and shoots me. And the first shot hits me in the shoulder.
So he shot you like pretty much like point blank, just like.
Yeah, it was probably, I don't know, maybe 2 feet by the end of the muzzle of my shoulder. As he was coming out, it super slow-mo.
Dude,
like extremely slow-mo, where I could tell everything about every characteristic of the gun
the grip, what kind of scratches it had on the barrel. It was gnarly. Just focused completely on the barrel coming out. And they say that happened, but I didn't know until it happened.
Yeah.
So he reached out, shot me. I was coming out with my gun pretty much at the same time. And I was able to shoot twice at him. And then I worked my way down the side of the car. He fires into the car twice.
When you get hit, like, and you're in front of the car.
Well, I'm dipping like this. So the bullet goes down and hits the ball joint of my shoulder where all the nerves are.
Yeah.
Ricochets off that and pops back out. So it's like a V. Goes down in here and then pops out my back.
And so then you ducked in behind the by the
Well,
tire.
I was moving this way, and that's why it was a downward, because he came up like a gangster and shot down like this, and I was ducking down like this to try to obviously get away. He shoots two more times as I'm shooting, and it's just like in the movies and stuff where you hear the zipping and the whiz. This is by your hair. So he's shooting, and I'm hearing it. I'm like, okay, I got hit once. Mad, because I'm like, this guy fucking shot me, right? Like, in disbelief. And I'm thinking, man, I'm doing good because he hasn't hit me in the head, but I'm running out of luck because we're super close. And I know, it's coming close. So I'm working my way down. I'm able to, this is open window, I'm able to shoot back at him. And then I get to the back of the car, and he's right here, popping up and popping down and shooting at me. And he's, like I said, he's tall, so he's able to reach up like over the car almost and shoot like in a downward action because he's up on this curb. So he's, you know, all I see is his head and his hand coming up over the car.
Dude, that's wild, man.
I had lost, or what I thought I lost, function of my left arm because I hit that ball joint, I think basically shut those nerves down momentarily. So I knew I was a little bit in trouble because it'd be hard to reload. I carried a 45 at the time, and it had 13 rounds. So it's really not that many rounds on in a gun.
That's the first thing I started thinking of. So literally, I mean, are you, knowing you have 13 rounds, are you like in this kind of the heat of the moment situation, are you counting rounds? No.
No, you kind of estimate.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had shot a couple right here. And then actually, I get back to the back of the car. You want to put that right there. I get to the back of the car, and he's right here on this side still. And I make it back over here where the wheel well is. And I'm able to see him, and he's shooting through the car, and they're popping out right by the wheel well. So he pops up, and I see him in the back window, and I shoot through the back window because I'm short as shit, and I can't get over the car to shoot him. So I shoot through the car, and those were – you can't see it, but there's some bullet holes over here in this area. He ends up going down, and I start backing up across the street.
Hit him?
Yeah. Well, I thought it was completely done. I thought, because I thought I did good here. So, right?
It looks like you did.
I did good. Yeah. I mean, it felt like I was good. So I backed up across the street because I knew the bullets were going through the car. He went down. I didn't know if he was reloading, if he was down, what his intentions were. And I knew that the car wasn't stopping the bullets. So, and I was hit. So I had to get across the street to the front of a car where the engine compartment is, and it stops bullets most of the time. So, and then I put out radio traffic and, you know, called for help or whatever. And I knew I had one or two rounds left, and I kind of posted up in the front of the car, and he ends up getting back up and coming at me with his gun again. So he runs towards me, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll wait because I can't reload, and I got to make these rounds kind of count. Otherwise, it's not going to be good for me. So I don't know. I didn't know if he was shooting or if I stopped hearing the sound or if he was out of ammo. He had a revolver. But so I hunker down. He ends up coming towards me and then jumping in a car that was like two or three cars down from where I was hunkered down. He pulls out and comes towards me. So now I'm thinking, okay, he's got another gun or he's coming to finish. So I take off. I know my backup's coming on this street behind me, and he's coming this way. So I figure I'll run towards my backup, and he'll follow me, and, you know, hopefully I'll have more guns in the fight.
Yeah.
I get to the corner, and it was the craziest thing because in this neighborhood, the demographics are a lot of Hispanic and African American, and a couple of white, but there's a lot of apartment complexes, and it's just traditionally that's the demographic.
Yeah.
And I get to the corner, and there's kind of a hodgepodge nursery on the corner, and this white dude and this blonde girl, little girl, are walking around the corner, and I'm bleeding everywhere. And I'm like, I'm probably dying because I don't know why these people are here, right?
They're just you're seeing
they're
shit
completely
now.
Yeah, they're out of the norm,
yeah.
Right? And I'm yelling, even on the radio, you hear me yelling, "Hey, get down, get down, get down!" And they're looking at me in pure shock because they're like, "What the fuck is going on?" Right? But they're not moving. So I think that he's going to start shooting any moment at me again. So I was able to grab the little girl and I chucked her over the fence into the nursery because I figured maybe, I mean, the dude, he's kind of on his own.
Yeah.
But at least the little girl, if they start dumping, maybe they'll hit me and him and not the little girl. He actually came up all the way to where I made contact with, almost to the end of the block. And I think he heard the people coming or my help. And turned around, took off. He ended up crashing, a little pursuit, and they ended up getting him in custody. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah.
Dude, so, that's crazy, man.
That's that.
Some nice handiwork.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of gives you a visual, I guess.
So, and this is one of the biggest things I wanted to ask you. Like, I know for me that you hear all the time, right, civilians, regular folk, that are not, that have, you know, zero, obviously, experience, expertise of doing anything like this. And they're the first ones, you know, something happens, right? Police officer shoots this person or exerts more, more force than the average person thinks is necessary or whatever. I obviously look at it, and maybe it's because, obviously, I've never been in a situation like that, but at least I have family, friends who experience this stuff on a fairly routine basis, that my first reaction is, how can you judge someone when you're not in that situation and you have to make absolute split second decisions? There's no time to, you know, oh, hold on, let me sit back and evaluate this. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is your, I mean, when you hear stuff like that, I mean, what do you, how do you take that? How does that make you feel? I mean, what is your message to? The things I think are awesome is I've seen a couple of, like, the, you know, different news stations or whatever, you know, they'll do this little mini scenario mm-hmm. with a police department, and they put the news reporter in the police officer's shoes.
We're humans too, and you hear that a lot. But just because we're law enforcement or military or whatever doesn't mean that we don't have fear, right? Just because we don't react to our fear the same way a civilian would, per se, or we don't express our fear the way some people do, doesn't mean that we're not scared in a lot of situations, right? It's human nature. You can't shut that off. If somebody says they can shut off, either they're extremely weird or they're lying.
Yeah.
Because bottom line, I could get scared almost on a daily basis at my job.
John, not to interrupt you, but John said that last week. John Robles, the professional MMA fighter who's a coach down at the South Bay location, just did the last episode with him and asked him the same question, like, do you have fear going in? And he said the exact same thing. He's like, of course. He's yeah. like, anyone who tells you that they don't have fear walking into that cage would be absolutely lying to you, or they're crazy and something's wrong with yeah. them. And it's just how you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there.
Yeah. And there's bad people, right? There's bad people like grocery stores, at shoe places. There's bad people in law enforcement. I would never say that law enforcement's without fault, right? Because we're human. We fear. We have emotions. You have to also take into account where you're getting that information, right? The news is the news because they grab people's attention.
They want stories, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I just think... I don't comment on a lot of things that happen, especially once I initially hear them. I like to say, you know what, let's wait until we get all the facts. Because if they're wrong, I don't want to say that they're right, based
right.
on what the news is giving us.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that they're wrong or right.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah,
I like to get all the facts.
Exactly.
And a lot of people like jumping because the news say, oh, an unarmed person got shot today. Okay, but what was that unarmed person doing, right? What led the cops to get to contact them? What's that dude's history? Is he, you know, a Bible guy that is passing out Bibles and goes to church every week and has never been in trouble? Or is he, you know, the guy that runs around town and steals everyone's shit and, you know, has been arrested 14 times and is a gang member? And the only picture you see is the dude in seventh grade at his church service. So you never get the gang picture.
You would think that would be pretty much the end of it. And now you've had your streak or run of bad luck, per se. And no. I was talking to Jeremy earlier. I'm almost worried that, you know, something's going to go down here in the next few minutes. But you were at Route 91. And not just there, but a pretty wild story about how you kind of stayed all the way through the bitter end and were kind of, I mean, more or less kind of helping getting everyone out and all that stuff. And your wife was with you and you got kids at home. But yet you made the decision to stay and help, which I think is an amazing story. So, I mean, what happened?
Well, I mean, I kind of want to start off and say that, you know, everybody handles situations differently. Law enforcement or not, military or not, civilian or not. I mean, there's a across the board, you really don't know how you're going to react in certain situations until they happen. So a lot of people did exactly what they should have done. You know, obviously, you don't know what's going on. I had no clue what was going on. It was the third day of a country concert in Las Vegas, having a great time, to say the least. And it was one of the last, I think it was the last performer. So it was late. So 3 days, all the way to the last concert, all the way at the end. So, I mean, you know, I like to have a good time. So we were, you know, having a couple beers. It's at the end of the night. And, you know, the stage is up in front. And Kelly, my wife, had gone up there several times throughout the concert the days prior, but everyone gets bunched in, and, you know, you can't go pee. You can't leave. So she's like, I'm not doing that on the last day. I'm going to hang back. Well, there's all these vendors on this side, the front stage. There's a packed front stage. Then there's like a little walkway, and then you could put like lounge chairs if you brought them. So we had some friends from work that brought some lounge chairs or some seats, because it's a standing venue. So I'm like, I'm going to go sit down. So, and it's close to the bar, which is a plus.
So, always a plus.
Yeah. So we were sitting there. Fortunately, my wife was next to me when he started shooting. As soon as he started shooting, I thought several different things. I didn't know where it was coming from. A lot of people, you know, have different views on that. But I could recognize the sound of...
Yeah, did you know what the sound was, like, immediately?
I mean, not immediately, I don't think. Probably midway through, during the first volley, I started thinking, okay, well, I know that's a rifle of some sort. Is that out on the strip? Because the strip can get pretty gnarly. I was thinking, like, Tupac or something.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. And I was sitting there and I'm like, okay. And then he was still playing on stage. So I'm trying to think. And then once it got about halfway through, I'm like, this ain't good. So I told, and that's when everyone started panicking and running. There was bars right here made of, cheap wood. I don't know, pallets. And so we just laid down because there was like an overhang. And I just, the one time in 6+ years that we've been married, my wife actually just like listened to me without, you know, without questioning it, which was fantastic, right?
So now you know how to get across, whatever you want to get across to her now. You just got to put her in a life-threatening situation.
Yeah, I have to make her panic.
Yeah.
So she obviously, I mean, she handled it well because she didn't run. I didn't think, not saying that I knew that that was the right thing to do, but I was still trying to analyze, okay, if there's someone in here shooting, I want to see where they're shooting from, because I don't want to be running towards an exit where they're shooting into. Or if it's ideally a terrorist attack, which is a good, yeah. A good idea in that situation. I don't want to be running towards an exit, have them push me there, and then be stuck in a shooting gallery. So I just decided to lay down and kind of figure it out. We lay down the first volley, then everybody gets up and starts running in that lull. I don't run where everybody else is running. I run towards what ends up being kind of towards where he's shooting, because everyone's running away from there. So I want to run kind of towards there to kind of figure out what's going on and not get bottled up. So we make our way almost to the front of the stage where that walkway was. Make our way to that walkway, and we start running out, because there was exit back here where everyone was looping around to, and then there's a made-up exit by a VIP section that people pushed down or moved the fences. So I wanted to go there because that was the way out, and there was big buildings and steel bleachers and stuff over there. So I figured that was a good spot to go. So we make our way across, but as we're making our way across, he starts shooting again, and we're out in the open. So we lay back down, and I'm telling people around me, hey, lay down, because obviously it's a very tense situation, and people think that there's a lot of misunderstanding. So people were hearing that, you know, there's somebody in the venue and he's over here or he's over here. So people are like running back and forth and running into each other.
Just total chaos.
Chaos. And I'm laying down with Kelly, and we come up to a heavier dude who had been shot. And I'm not trying to make light of it, but at the time I was like, of all people, we can't run into the 100-pound girl. You know what I mean? I gotta run into the 300-pound dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, and it's me and Kelly. And I'm like, okay, this isn't gonna work. But we can't just leave him. He's right in the middle. So he had been shot in the chest.
Shit.
And so another dude came over. I assume he was military, because we kind of just said, hey, we'll get the feet and you get the arms, and we'll just shuffle as soon as the next little goes. So we kind of made up a quick plan. We start running. Another dude comes up and grabs one of the legs. Now we're not in sync. So we start running. The shooting starts again, and he's running this way, and I'm running this way, and this dude stops. So we fall. And we just pick him back up, and we get him over to that area that I talked about. It was like a makeshift triage area. A lot of people were either laying down there, or people were bringing people there. And once I got there and dropped that dude off, it was probably at the end of the second volley or the second round of shots. And I had told, I felt that place was pretty safe, and I couldn't leave the venue. I mean, I don't know what it was, but I had like
just something inside of you,
like this burning, like, man, I watched my wife in pure terror, right? I never want to see that again. You know, when your wife looks at you and says, I don't want to die. You know, that's tough. So I think that was probably the biggest the most traumatic of the event that I home on is seeing that look in someone, you know, in your wife's eyes, or significant other, your brother, sister, whatever. So, but I knew she was somewhat safe over there, and I just pictured I just pictured people dying alone, right? I'm like, I wouldn't want to be laying in that field dying and everybody just
leaving,
fucking running past me. So I'm like, okay, well, at least my wife will be safe. So anyways, I told her, hey, you need to get on. I'll meet back up with you. And of course she didn't want to leave, or she didn't want me to go back. But again, she listened. I don't know how it was. I should have recorded that. But she listened, and she got on. And I mean, if she wasn't a strong woman, honestly, if she folded, it would have made it a lot worse, because she would have been there, still in that kind of that shitty area, and not known what to do. Right? Self-destructed in a way, ran the wrong way. But luckily, she's ultimately a very strong-willed person. And as terrified as she agreed, and she got herself out the rest of the way and ended up at a hotel down the street. I ran back in. Dude was still shooting sporadically. Made my way up to a female.
At this point, I mean, and I've heard different stories, but I mean, are there like people shot everywhere? Is that not the scene? I mean, what is the scene? What is it like at that point?
Yes and no. The lights were still, I mean, so when he runs off, all the spotlights go on, right, in the field. So it lights everything up, which, I mean, was good for people running to see where they can go, but obviously it's bad because it lights up the whole deal. There were definitely people kind of strewn, but it wasn't overwhelming in a way because it was a big field. So, I mean, it was overwhelming in the type of injuries there were, but as far as like body, it wasn't like that. It was kind of spread out. So I made my way back and came across a girl with blonde hair, and she was clearly, to me, dead. So she had a head wound, and her boyfriend or husband was like yelling at me to help him. And that was tough because I'm like, I can't help you, dude, because there's other people that probably are good alive.
Yeah.
And I felt like an asshole, right? Because he just wants someone to help him carry his chick. But there was a lot more people that were bunkered down and yelling and screaming further on. So anyways, we go and I run into another two guys, I think. I don't know who they were.
No, during this time, are there other, like, are you with those two guys that you helped carry that big dude out? Are you solo? Are there other people helping?
I'm solo back. I assume the other guys ran in. But, I mean, it's a big field, and there's people everywhere. I just decided to take the straightest route because I knew there was people that were hit from where I came from. So I knew that route that I took, so I didn't want to vary because I didn't know how to get back out.
Yeah.
So I ran straight back across where I came from. Ran into a younger, or maybe mid-30s female who had been shot in the right breast. Exit wound out her back. She was still talking and breathing. And me and two other guys carried her out. But as we're carrying her out, you know, she's saying something. Either her name is Rose, because I'm trying to talk to her, or her someone's Rose or something along those lines. So I'm trying to figure out what she's saying. And we're loading people into the ambulance, like stacking, right? So we stack one, put one dude on the floor, another dude, and then this chick on the gurney. She gets the gurney. She's still breathing stuff. Well, she grabs me and she said, "Don't leave me," right? So I'm like, well, that's kind of good and bad because, I mean, it's kind of a shitty place to stay. But, you know, I mean, but at the same time, like, I don't know this woman. But again, I still had that, like, okay, if she dies and I don't go with her, like, I'm going to feel like an asshole, right? And I wouldn't want to die alone. So I jump in the ambulance and, you know, I'm holding her hand and we're talking. But she's not really talking. I'm asking her what her name is, and I don't get a whole lot. Get out. We go to Sunrise Hospital, which is, I assume, a smaller hospital. And it's just pure chaos. I mean, people are unloading people out of trucks, as you heard. And we're just wheeling, you know, get her, put everyone's just wheeling people back and triaging right there in the driveway. So I ended up staying there till like, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning. And apparently her name wasn't Rose because, and at the time they didn't know, they weren't getting names. They were asking for pictures of people because there's so many people that they didn't have time to get names, birthdates, nothing. They just said, hey, if you got a picture, you can show it to us. And we have someone walking around looking at the people to see if they can put a face to a name. Obviously, I didn't have a picture of her. So I kind of hung out because I was hoping for some reason that I could figure out who she was and if she lived or died and stuff like that. Long story short, I never figured it out. Kind of pisses me off. But I assume she lived and everything's good. Then I went home, met back up with Kelly. She was locked down in a hotel for several hours after. And then we packed her stuff and went home. So
That is crazy, man.
It's kind of a long-winded story, but.
No, that's wild. What are you thinking of? I mean, or is that it? Is it just like you're literally pure focus at that point? I mean, we talk about fear and how you have it. I mean, when you're going and you tell Kelly to go off and you run back in, I mean, is there fear at that moment that's in your mind? Are you thinking about her kids, or are you just pure, I got a mission and this is what I'm doing right now kind of a thing?
Yeah, you know, the funny part is that when we were laying down before we started moving, I'm laying there and I'm just thinking, okay, well, it's going to stop, right? My wife's asking, when is it going to stop, right? When is it going to stop? When is it going to stop? And she tells me she doesn't want to die, right? And it's the most eerie thing because of all things, I'm not, at that point, I'm not scared. To me, I'm just sitting there like trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. And I started laughing at her, right? I'm laying there and I'm laughing. She's like, why the fuck are you laughing, right? She can't understand why I'm laughing. I'm laughing and I'm like, well, shit, you can't die because I can't take care of the kids by myself, right? And that's what I was thinking at that point. And she was like, looking at me like I was crazy.
Yeah. But,
and also I was thinking of all the shit I've been through, I'm going to die at a country concert, right? Yeah. That's why I was also, I mean, laughing. And it's not funny. I didn't think what was happening was funny, but in that moment, to me, I was thinking of my kids, obviously, my wife saying that I'm like, fuck, shit, she can't die because, you know, it's going to be a nightmare.
That's too much work.
Too much. And then all this stuff, I was like, oh, man, everyone's going to talk about, you know, I was able to make it through all these crazy incidents, and then I go to a country concert and I die, right? So that's what, at that point, was laughing. And then I wasn't even thinking, and I hate to say, like, I wasn't even thinking about my kids, but I put it away, you know?
I'd almost imagine you'd have to.
Yeah, and you do. I do it a lot at work, too, because you go on kids' calls and stuff, and if you get wrapped up in that, it's very emotional. So, I just put it away. So,
Do you think that, obviously, I'd like to think and sit here and tell the camera that, you know what I mean, if I would have been at a concert or a situation like that, that, you know, I would do what you did. But obviously I don't know. I wouldn't know unless I was actually put into that situation if I would go down that road. I mean, do you think it's just a who you are, you know what I mean, like type of a thing? I mean, do you think it's just something that's in an individual, whether they, you know, when that time comes, they make that decision one way or the other?
I mean, I'd like to think that, and there is hundreds of people that did a lot more than I did, you know what I mean? And that was a tough spot too, because I left, right? Even though I ran back in and got someone and brought him out and stuff like that, but I ended up leaving. And the shooting was over. Ultimately, it was over by the time I was leaving. But I didn't know that at the time. And I would like to think that besides the hundreds or however many people did a lot more than I did, that I think everyone has it in them at one point or another to want to do something more than what would be expected, I guess you'd say. I'd like to think that everybody has that good in them, in a way, that would want to help someone else out, you know, put someone else ahead of them, and especially in a situation like that, because that's what ultimately makes the difference and makes something positive come out of something so tragic.
Wow. Those, and we knew Debbie Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
She was shot there. God, there's another
Andy Daring.
Andrew Daring. He was shot too. Both cops, both, you know, at the very least used to be members of Afterburner or members of Afterburn. And I mean, at the end of the day, I think the biggest point that I kind of wanted to get across with this and, you know, hearing those stories is just that, like, just to kind of make people take a step back and think and appreciate, like, I guess who the true heroes are. And again, in instances like Route 91, You know what I mean? It's not even always the ones who are the police, fire, military. Like, it could be anyone. The ability that we all have, I think, at the end of the day, to do something more, like you started to allude to, is literally what makes America America, which makes the place that we live, you know, what it is. And I mean, honestly, just like from the bottom of my heart, I'm sure a million other people would say the same thing. Like, I thank you guys for everything you do. I don't know. It's eye opening to listen to this kind of stuff and hear those stories. So, I mean, honestly, dude, just thank you for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
For opening us up to your world. Your crazy as shit world.
Yeah. Not a, you know, a lot of tough subjects to talk about, but hopefully it kind of shed a little bit of light into, you know, what actually happens and, you know, what's portrayed. And also, you know, fortunate enough to come out and be able to share the story, I guess, as unfortunate as it is, because there was a lot of good that came out of such a shitty
for sure
situation. So,
well, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Gio. See you next week, guys.